This is the Phyllis Schlafly Report. Mrs. Schlafly is an articulate spokesman in the media and before legislative committees on conservative and pro-family issues, and was named one of the 100 most important women of the century by the Ladies' Home Journal. And now here's the president of Eagle Forum, Phyllis Schlafly.
The Obama administration has taken over major parts of our economy, so now the bureaucrats are eager to take over what public schools teach our children. Former schoolteacher and author Orlean Kerla explains their current goal, why you should be concerned, and what you can do about it. Her new book is called Common Core, A Trojan Horse for Education Reform. This national takeover of school curriculum was cleverly named Common Core State Standard Initiative, so it sounds as if it were developed by the states. But that's not true. It was developed by trade groups and corporate interests that will make a lot of money from its implementation. The Obama administration induced 46 states to give up local control of their English and math curricula through a clever carrot-and-stick method, a combination of bribery, waivers for the hated No Child Left Behind Act, and threats to cut off future federal grants. Left out of the development of this new curriculum were parents, local and state school boards, and state legislatures. The price tag to adopt Common Core standards is enormous. It's also important to note that Common Core standards will not make kids any smarter. The math standards are so substandard that the only real mathematician on the validation committee refused to approve them. He said that Common Core standards are 2 years behind international expectations by the eighth grade and then fall further behind in grades 8 to 12. The math standards downgrade the years when algebra and geometry are to be taught. The name of this very useful book is Common Core, A Trojan Horse for Education Reform, and the author is Orlean Kerla. Parents, go to Eagle Forum's website, eagleforum.org, for more information about Common Core.
College students, you're invited to the 20th annual Eagle Forum Collegian Summit on July 18 and 19 in Washington, D.C. Get equipped to combat the liberal ideologies of multiculturalism, diversity, and feminism on your campus. Network with conservative leaders. Register in advance, and the conference is free. Go to eagleforum.org and click on Collegians. That's eagleforum.org. And join us again for the Phyllis Schlafly Report.
Do you love America? Do you support the right to bear arms? Do you have an opinion on the current immigration issue? Do you believe in the dollar? You have a voice. You have an opinion. Let it be heard. Go to AmericanFreedomSurvey.com right now and make your voice count. Do you like your rights taken away for the so-called sake of public safety? Do you want to repeal Obamacare? Go to AmericanFreedomSurvey.com today and fight back. All you have to do is fill out a short survey and you're done. Simple, easy, fast. For your time, you get entered to win free gold and silver. That's right. Get gold and silver free by filling out this short survey that enters you to win. AmericanFreedomSurvey.com. Go to AmericanFreedomSurvey.com today. That's AmericanFreedomSurvey.com.
Knob Creek Gun Range invites you to come out and support the Second Amendment, the right to keep and bear arms, the country's biggest machine gun and military gun show. The three-day event is October 12th, 13th, and 14th at Knob Creek, Kentucky, where the public can participate in the high-power action. Thousands attend this semi-annual event. This is a must-see for all gun enthusiasts and collectors. There will be hundreds of vendors for every type of firearm and accessory available in the marketplace today. Go to www.machinegunshoot.com for all the scheduled events and directions to Knob Creek, Kentucky. On-site camping facilities available, or go to www.machinegunshoot.com for hotel and motel accommodations. Only $10 admission fee per day, $5 for 12 and under. Knob Creek Gun Range is also open year-round for your shooting enjoyment. Call 502-922-4457 for more information, or visit www.machinegunshoot.com.
corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
And this is Deanna Spingola. I'm coming to you from the suburbs of Chicago. I really appreciate you joining me today on RBN, whose website is republicbroadcasting.org. To see the guest lineup and relevant links for this program, please visit spingola.com, where you will see the names of every single guest that I've ever had on the program, and that is since October 23rd, 2010. You may also have, there's also links to their websites, plus other valuable links. Just visit the website, spingola.com, and click on the radio schedule button. Please also visit spingolaspeaks.info, a site that one of our wonderful, very talented listeners created. During the program, email your questions or comments to comment@spingola.com. Join others in the chat room by clicking on the chat room button on my website or by going to spingola.chatango.com. A British government white paper of April 1919 stated, and I quote, "It was an open secret that the overthrow of the Russian government and the seizure of power with incalculable consequences for the rest of the world was largely organized by international Jewish revolutionaries. The world's greatest landmass was being hijacked." Unquote. Mr. M. Oudendijk, the representative of the Netherlands government in St. Petersburg, who was in charge of British interest after the liquidation of the British embassy by the Bolsheviks, sent in a report to Foreign Secretary Sir Arthur Balfour. And I quote, "I consider that the immediate suppression of Bolshevism is the greatest issue now before the world, not even excluding the war which is still raging, and unless Bolshevism is nipped in the bud immediately, it is bound to spread in one form or another over Europe and the whole world, as it is organized and worked by Jews who have no nationality and whose one object is to destroy for their own ends the existing order of things." Unquote. Winston Churchill, who was actually a scoundrel, who I don't quote very often, if ever, agreed with this view in an article he wrote for the Illustrated Sunday Herald of February 8, 1920, and I quote, "It may well be that this same astounding race, the Jews, may at the present time be in the actual process of providing another system of morals and philosophy as malevolent as Christianity was benevolent, which, if not arrested, would shatter irretrievably all that Christianity has rendered possible. This movement among the Jews is not new. It has been the mainstream, the mainspring of every subversive movement since the 19th century, and now, at last, this band of extraordinary personalities from the underworld of the great cities of Europe and America have gripped the Russian people by the hair of their heads and have become practically the undisputed masters of that enormous empire." Unquote. All righty. We will take calls in the second hour when we open the phone lines at 800-313-9443. Our guest today is Joe Atwell, Will, A-T-W-I-L-L. He is the author of the book Caesar's Messiah. His website is caesarsmessiah.com, where you can look at a trailer of a video based on his book. Joe, welcome to the program. Oh, we don't have Joe. Okay. Joe is not responding. So, okay, Caesarsmessiah.com is the website. Let's see. What shall we do here before we get into this? A very good friend of mine sent me three extraordinary websites today, and one of them deals with the Dead Sea Scrolls. Now, the Dead Sea Scrolls is something that, it's a very interesting story. They did make, they had them on display in Chicago here downtown, at one of the big museums downtown. And this was probably 15 years ago. Now, keep in mind that the Dead Sea Scrolls have not all been translated, that there are several different scrolls. There's the Great Isaiah Scroll, the Temple Scroll, the War Scroll, the Community Rule Scroll, and the Commentary on the Habakkuk Scroll. So these mainly take place. The writings are from the Old Testament period of time. They do not cover anything of the first century, and so it's quite unusual that somebody would use them to try to prove what happened in the first century, and apparently that is what is the case. Let me just read you a quote. The Dead Sea Scrolls, ancient Jewish text, discovered in caves in Israel in 1947, give a different picture than the idyllic first century Holy Land of the Gospels. From year one, there were battles and confrontations between the Romans and the Jews. The scrolls note, and there is no turning of the other cheek by the likes of rebel leader Judah of Galilee, and there was nary a mention in the scrolls of the peaceable prophet Jesus Christ, unquote. Okay, the scrolls are Old Testament, totally. They do not cover the first century. And so it would be very interesting for somebody to use the Dead Sea Scrolls in order to prove something in the first century. Do we have Joe on yet? No? Fanny? Nope. Okay. So we don't have him on yet. I'm not sure what's going on here. Anyway, Joe approached me and asked if he could be on my program. And since I tried to have kind of a broad range of guests on who represent different opinions and different areas of research, I thought, well, this would be very interesting. Let's just go to his website. Let me see. I've got so many websites open here. Let me look here. Caesar's Messiah. Okay, we have him. Okay, I don't have a phone number for him. I have one downstairs on my other computer, which I will have to, we'll have to call him if he's not answering on his Skype. Let's see. I show him online. He is online, but he's just apparently not answering the phone or not answering the Skype message. Let me see if I can just message him because he knew that we were going to connect with him via Skype. I'm not sure why he's not picking up because I do show him as being online. So I'm not sure what's going on. Okay, we got him? Okay.
I'm here.
Okay. All righty. I'm glad you're here. Okay, so tell us what motivated you to go into this kind of a situation, to go into this kind of an investigation?
Well, I was raised a Catholic and attended a Jesuit military academy in Tokyo, where I grew up. And it was a strange school in that it had a curriculum which essentially was from like the 15th century. You know, it was had just a lot of training in the Gospels. And so as I grew older, I sort of fell away from the Catholic faith. It just wasn't really part of the life I was living. But I was always kind of curious about the Gospels because it had been just presented to me so consistently during my youth. And later on, when the Dead Sea Scrolls became well known, the controversy about them, about what relationship they had to Christianity, caught my attention. And I started reading books about the individuals who produced the scrolls and the different theories about the sect. And one thing was clear to me is that the Messianic group that was producing literature was totally different.
Joe, I'm sorry, we do have to cut to a 3-minute break. We'll be right back.
No problem.
World-renowned physician and stem cell expert Dr. David Steenblok, D.O., and his research staff have spent years developing all-natural formulations that support the body's own stem cell production and mobilization system, an everyday stem cell supplement, creating the birth of Stemgevity. Stemgevity stem cell mobilization formula is for use by men, women, and children of all ages to support your body's stem cell system naturally, quickly, and safely. Stemgevity helps support your heart and circulatory system, bones and joints, liver, skin, brain, and much more. Order your bottle now at Stemgevity.com today. That's Stemgevity. Stemgevity.com. Or call now toll free 800-300-1063. Buy two bottles and receive a third bottle free by mentioning RBN. Anyone who wants to get healthy needs Stemgevity. Call 800-300-1063 today.
Are you prepared? Are you ready? You should be. CampingSurvival.com is your source for camping supplies, survival gear, and survival food. Whether you are an emergency preparedness-minded individual interested in MRE, a hardcore hiker in need of paracord, a water filter system and fire piston, or you just need a basic first aid kit or emergency kit for the family, CampingSurvival.com is the right place. Call CampingSurvival.com today, toll free at 800-537-1339. CampingSurvival.com. It's not about the end of the world. It's not about surviving a hypothetical plane crash. It's about the satisfaction you get knowing you can take care of yourself and or your family in any situation, anytime, anywhere. Visit CampingSurvival.com now and receive 5% off any purchase with the code FREEDOM. CampingSurvival.com.
The AK-47 is known for being tough and battle-ready. Now you can be battle-ready with tough tactical gear from StrikeHardGear.com. Made in the USA, StrikeHardGear.com specializes in mil-spec quality tactical gear for your AK-47, SKS Mosin-Nagant, and other Russian-style weapons. Visit StrikeHardGear.com to find chest rigs, buttstock pouches, bandoliers, shoulder bags, and other one-of-a-kind pieces of specialty gear you won't find anywhere else. Tough as nails and affordable. Buy with confidence from StrikeHardGear.com with our no-questions-asked 30-day money-back guarantee. After that, run it hard because you're backed by a lifetime replacement warranty. Use the discount code RBN and get 5% off your order. Pull the trigger on StrikeHardGear.com today. Strike Hard Gear.
The author of Caesar's Messiah. His website is caesarsmessiah.com. And Joe, you were talking about your earlier education and the fact that you had studied the Gospels, which is kind of unusual in a Catholic setting, because usually they don't necessarily study the Scriptures. They kind of, you know, take things out of the Scriptures. I have been to Catholic Masses before. So how did you happen to, in a Jesuit setting, how did you happen to be studying the Gospels?
Well, it was because the curriculum in the at St. Mary's Military Academy in the 50s was not sort of the normal catechism approach that the Catholic schools have today, though I have to tell you I'm not really very much of a specialist in what their pedagogy is at the moment. I don't really have any connection to them. But I know that at the time when I was attending, they had this essentially what a lot of times referred to was the trivium or quadrivium, which were medieval ages sorts of curriculum. And that's really the approach that they took, which was that, you know, the Gospels really needed to be studied all the time, every day. And so it was just part of my, you know, early life was every day there would be some sort of reading about the Gospels, and the priest would attempt to explain it to us. Hopefully, I mean, the idea I think they were trying to do was to give us a deeper understanding of it. I don't think that is the case any longer, but anyway, this was just how I began, you know, being interested in the subject. It was just sort of ingrained in me at a young age. And when I learned about the scrolls, they were very curious to me because they seemed to be talking about a messianic movement that was militaristic. And the more I studied the scrolls later in my life, I...
And what capacity did you study the scrolls? How did you go about doing that?
Well, you know, the beginning of it was just reading books that were written about the scrolls, and particularly about the controversy about why they weren't being released. And there was a lot of theories about this. There were some, you know, very wild speculations about what the material that wasn't being released contained. And I began corresponding with the individual who eventually was the most responsible for releasing the scrolls, Dr. Robert Eisenman, who we ended up writing a paper together that was published called Redating the Dating, which is available on the internet if any of your listeners are curious about it. And basically, we just had sort of a different understanding than a lot of scholars did about the nature of the scrolls and, you know, the carbon 14 dating. We had impressions about that were different. But there, whatever, you know, one makes of the scrolls, there's no way that they can fit into, you know, sort of an easy understanding or a belief of the origins of Christianity that is consistent with what we've been given, because the scrolls are really about a warrior messiah and a warrior culture. And so that was, to answer you, getting back to your original question, that was really what propelled me into studying them, was that I was just surprised that that there had never been any mention of this messianic movement that was warrior oriented and xenophobic during my studies in Christianity as a youngster. And so that really that was really the motivation to try to, you know, go back into my study of Christianity and redo it to try to see if I could actually make some sense of Christianity, you know, given the historical context that the scrolls were describing. And one, you know, just sort of major point of confusion I had was that the first century in Judea was a war zone. There was a chronic rebellion that flared up into major wars from time to time, but was always essentially in effect. Through the whole first century, Judea was an occupied Roman province. There was religious disputes between the Jews and the Romans, and they rebelled constantly, and in several times were actually able to set up their own nation state. They were able to rebel successfully and drive the Romans out. And the group that led them was a messianic movement. The Roman historian Josephus said that what most propelled the Jews to rebel was their belief in the coming Messiah. And so that was sort of the beginning of my studies, was trying to reconcile this history of Judea as a war zone in the first century and the war being led by a messianic movement, as opposed to what the Gospels had presents as history in that era. And so then in studying the two works, the history of Josephus, and I was studying that because it's really the only history of the era that Jesus purportedly lived that we have. And so because I was trying to understand the Gospels from a historical perspective, I was reading the works of Josephus intently. And that was when I noticed that the Gospels contain just a great many references to events from the war. They're given often as prophecies, though sometimes not. So the Gospels were written following the war and are really oriented almost completely toward the war. And so as I started to study that, I began to realize that the entire ministry of Jesus was actually had been developed from the war. I could see that the character of Jesus Christ was actually fictional. And that his adult...
How did you decide that?
Well, it's interesting. The character is really one of the only characters in literature that can actually be completely demonstrated as fiction. And you do get into a kind of semantical issue as what is fiction, what is history, but the way to understand the character is just to understand the very simple and obvious typology that the Gospels begin with. In other words, if you look at the story of Jesus as from the very first page in Matthew, you see that you have the story of Joseph goes to Egypt, Matthew 2:13, I believe. You go on to this description of the massacre of the boys. And then you have the statement, they are dead, which sought the young child's life. Then you have the return from Egypt to Israel, the baptism, you pass through water. At this point, Jesus goes into the wilderness for 40 days, and you have the three temptations, which the narrative quotes, tempted by bread, do not tempt God, and worship only God. Now, that is the beginning of the Gospels, and it is, you know, the general description of the pre-ministry of the character of Jesus Christ, and it's all fictional.
Because why do you say that?
Well, all of the elements are actually taken from another story. They're taken from the Old Testament. Genesis 45, you have the story of Joseph, the dreamer of dreams, going to Egypt. That's followed by the description of the massacre of the boys, Pharaoh's massacre.
Well, Egypt was certainly a travel route. People often went to Egypt. That was just part of the commerce route. Alrighty, we do have a 4-minute break. We'll be right back after a word from our sponsors.
Ground beef, eggs, butter, cheese, soup, sandwiches, strawberries, ice cream, coffee, and more. What do these foods have in common? They all come in storable, long shelf life food for you to save and use in uncertain times. Rather, if it is a meal or a snack for a family or just yourself, CampingSurvival.com offers a huge variety of storable food for you to be prepared anytime. Go to CampingSurvival.com to order all your food. Eat today, save it for tomorrow, or store it for years to come. CampingSurvival.com sells healthy, nutritious, storable food in number 10 cans and pouches. Order online today at CampingSurvival.com. Use code FREEDOM and receive 5% off. CampingSurvival.com. Remember, save 5% off with code FREEDOM at CampingSurvival.com on all your prepared food needs.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.com. www.ncbc.org.
John Stadtmiller here. Sometimes in life you get lucky. Well, today is your lucky day. Our sponsor, AmericanSurvivalWholesale.com, have just announced their biggest savings yet on their one-month food supply by Linden Farms. This great one-month pack includes over 360 servings based on 2,000 calories per day. While supplies last, you'll get one free month of long-term emergency food entrees when you buy three. This is a massive savings of $600 on a four-month supply. Again, AmericanSurvivalWholesale.com is giving you buy 3 months, get an additional 1 month of food free. This is a great deal. Act fast. The site again is AmericanSurvivalWholesale.com or call them directly at 818-720-0759, 818-720-0759. Let them know John sent you. Do it today. AmericanSurvivalWholesale.com. Veteran owned and operated.
That moment of panic. Sheer terror, really. You're afraid to answer the phone. Frightened by who might be at the door. If you're facing foreclosure or being harassed by debt collectors, you know the feeling. You need to visit whatliesinyourdebt.com to turn the tables on the banksters, collection agencies, and other crooks. Whatliesinyourdebt.com has solutions. Whatliesinyourdebt.com features live training webinars from experts, a member forum, support from experts who've been where you are right now and came out the other side in a better financial situation. If you are like millions of Americans who are behind on their mortgage, behind on their credit cards, or just being harassed by debt collectors, then this system is for you. We promise. If you cannot stop your foreclosure, even if it's imminent, if you cannot stop those debt collectors from bugging you, if you cannot clean up your credit, and finally, if you cannot make a few $1,000s during the entire process, make money from the debt collectors, yes, at whatliesinyourdebt.com, we will refund your money 100% in the first 60 days. Don't fear the bill collectors anymore. Visit whatliesinyourdebt.com.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
All righty, welcome back. This is Deanna. Excuse me. Our guest today is Joe Atwill. His website is CaesarsMessiah.com. And before we go further, I know that you are associated with Ryan Gilmore. In fact, he emailed me also about having you on the program. Who is Ryan? I know he lives in the UK. And how did you become associated with him? And what?
Ryan was aware of my work and became interested in it. And we discussed the sort of meaning that understanding the real origins of Christianity had in the present day. And we recognized that really it's fairly easy to demonstrate that Christianity was the genesis of government psychological warfare, that it was done as a kind of mind control element to set up the feudal system. And we are troubled by the many parallels between the first feudal system and what's going on in the world today. I hope at some point we can get into the neo-Christianity that has been developed as part of sort of the counterculture. You know, not to leap too far ahead, but, you know, the counterculture has an enormous psychedelic drug and rock and roll music component, and these things can pretty concretely be demonstrated to have come from a project within the CIA called MK Ultra. Mm-hmm. And so beyond that, you have what's called the Neo-Christianity, which, you know, really begins with a book called A Course in Miracles, in which the a woman claims to be able to channel the, you know, concepts, present-day concepts of Jesus Christ. And it so happens that the two individuals that brought the book out were both employees of MKUltra, Thetford and Schumann. And so this
What were their names? I'm sorry.
They were, I believe, Robert Thetford and Helen Schumann. And they were both MKUltra employees. They were actually very specific kinds of psychologists. They'd been hired to do kind of psychometrician work, you know, just studying the actual details of how individuals could be controlled. I mean, MKUltra is, in a general sense, was just very involved with how mind control could operate. So this was, their work was just another component of it. And so the idea that this was the beginning of what became the Neo-Christianity, with all of the channeling and kind of new age philosophy that that is ascribed to the character of Jesus Christ, is
Who ascribed that new age philosophy to him? Where do you see that happening in the New Testament?
Oh, it doesn't happen at all in the New Testament. It happens in a book, A Course in Miracles, where Helen Schumann claims that she is able to directly communicate with Jesus Christ, and then records his philosophies. And the book, A Course in Miracles, if you sort of trace the, you know, how the sort of Neo-Christianity develops in our culture, is really the ground zero. It starts here, and then you go on to individuals like Marianne Williamson and then, of course, Kenneth Wapnick. Wapnick is very interesting. He actually then takes over the foundation, which is developed from A Course in Miracles, and he then explains, for example, that Helen's understanding of Jesus, his current philosophy, gives you a way to not have a negative reaction to the torture at Abu Ghraib prison camp. You recall all of the humiliating pictures, sure, with sexual abuse. Well, so Wapnick then in his book says, well, this is what Jesus is telling us, is to how, essentially saying, don't have any kind of moral consternation about this kind of torture, because it's, I mean, I'll let him explain it himself in his words, but this then seemed very clear to me that what you have is a kind of mind control. Going back to the way Christianity was used in the first version of Christianity, I want to just explain that, just so that you can kind of understand how it is that Neo-Christianity fits into this. Constantine develops Christianity as the state religion, and this occurs in the beginning of the 4th century, and the process takes about 80 years. It's a very long process, but eventually you have the entire Roman military supporting Roman Christianity, and they are destroying the other temples and literally killing people who aren't involved in the state religion. So Constantine is given a very positive historical legacy for sort of taking us out of paganism and bringing us into, you know, this the Christianized Europe. But
okay, Catholicized Europe.
Catholicized Europe, right. And though this is his kind of known legacy, the fact is that he issued a great many edicts beyond just the edicts that started Christianity becoming the state religion. And those edicts created the feudal system. In other words, you had a class of Roman, not citizens, but they were Roman inhabitants who had been able to possess their own land. And they were called the coloni. This is the basis of the word colonization. And they took wild land, cultivated it, And because of that, they could essentially own it and realize the benefit of whatever they could grow on it. Well, Constantine ended their legal status. And what he did was is he took away their rights of ownership of land. He took away their ability to change vocation. They couldn't, whatever they had been born into, they had to stay. He took away their rights of travel. They had to stay put. They couldn't travel. He made it a martial offense for anyone to give harbor to someone who attempted to leave the land that they had been enslaved on. And he also said that that the owner of the land could sell the children of the coloni. In other words, they were fully slaves, and if someone else needed a population increase in another area, then the children could simply be sold. So this is the correct context to judge Constantine's creation of the state religion of Christianity. And if you look at it from that perspective, it's obvious that what you had was an authority structure that was established by Constantine that has the serf at the bottom, and the word serf simply means slave, and the pope at the top. The pope had the title of the Pontiff Maximus, which is one of the titles that Caesar held. It was his official title as the head of the Roman College of Priests. And the Vatican, which has been a long-standing site of the papal see, was the very hill that the Flavian Caesars had their palace on. So the location is the same, the title is the same.
Well, wasn't this because he really wanted to attract all of the people who had been previously paganistic? He wanted to attract everyone.
No, I just don't buy it. What I see is that the Roman Caesars had a religion that was known as the imperial cult, and it was an obvious attempt at mind control. It simply presented Caesar as a god, and it was the largest bureaucracy in the Roman Empire. It went on for hundreds of years, but it wasn't very successful. People simply would always, at some point, not believe that the Caesar really was divine, and therefore they would be propelled to rebel. This was the problem that the Caesars had constantly throughout the Roman Empire, because the Roman Empire was a prison of nations. It had conquered dozens of ethnicities and little kingdoms, and so it tried to use religion as a unifying principle to stop the rebellions. And this is why the obvious explanation as to why someone who would be selling children, right, would claim to be, suddenly a Christian, is that it was simply the new form of the mind control that the imperial cult had failed at. Now, beyond this, if you look at the hierarchy of the feudal system, which lasted for over 1,000 years, and there are dozens of paintings which characterize this hierarchical structure, every one of them has the pope on the top, and every one of them has the serf on the bottom. Now, the serf is unable to rebel, because the only concepts, religious or otherwise, that he's being given is that of Christianity. And the fact is that the Pope is claiming to be the direct representative of Jesus Christ on the planet, claiming the direct lineage from Simon. And so you can't rebel because he's God's representative.
Sure. All righty. Joe, we do have to take a 3-minute break. We'll be right back after a word from our sponsors.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at libertystickers.com. Again, that's libertystickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Do you flinch when a police car appears in your rearview mirror or you get pulled over? Are you squeamish when an envelope arrives in the mail with a return address of a court, a government agency like the IRS, or some law firm? Would you like to escape government agency harassment? Then visit escapeharassment.com. George Bush allegedly says, "The government constitution is nothing but a doggone piece of paper." Well, that's a contract. A contract is an offer acceptance of that offer, at which point a contract arises by law and the offerer can no longer withdraw the offer. We teach, do not accept. That way there is no contract or agreement for you to go to their court or private club meeting. To escape government agency harassment like the IRS, visit escapeharassment.com. This is a tried and proven experienced process, not experimental, with a money-back guarantee that it works and success testimonials from previous students. Remember, escapeharassment.com. That's escapeharassment.com.
This is Dr. Robert Rowan here to give you an important message regarding stem cell treatment. World-renowned physician, stem cell expert, and friend Dr. David Steinblatt has performed over 8,000 stem cell treatments since 2001. Bone marrow stem cells are completely legal to do here in the USA. The bone marrow stem cell treatment is not only fast, done in less than 2 to 3 hours, but is relatively pain-free and has little to no recovery time. Dr. David Steinblatt and his office are able to help and treat patients who suffer from cerebral palsy, traumatic brain injury, stroke, macular degeneration, arthritis, Parkinson's disease, congestive heart failure, and more. Personally using their services for my knee and seeing great improvement, Dr. David Steinblatt is highly recommended by me. Go to stemcellmd.org or call 800-300-1063 to find out more. Again, stemcellmd.org or call 800-300-1063 today to receive more information.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Welcome back. This is Deanna. Our guest today is Joe Atwill, A-T-W-I-L-L. He is the author of Caesar's Messiah. His website is caesarsmessiah.com. Is there anybody funding you, any organization that is funding your research?
No.
Okay. Can you make a connection between the state church that Constantine established and the claim that you make that Jesus did not exist? How do you combine those two ideas?
Well, they don't need to be combined. They're not mutually exclusive. If Jesus existed, it's also possible that then Constantine, having seen the effect of the religion over, you know, more than 100 years, would have just made a decision to that this is a great idea to use as the religious mind control device of the political structure that enslaved Europe for over 1,000 years.
What would you recommend as a replacement for what you say in an ideology that enslaved Europe for over 1,000 years?
Well, I mean, the fact that the feudal system is a slave system and was in effect in Europe for over 1,000 years, or, you know, can't really be disputed. And the fact that at the top of it was the Pontiff Maximus, again, is just a historical fact. There's really not a lot anyone can do about it. And it certainly requires an explanation, since the Catholic Church purports that it's following the philosophy described in the gospel of its so-called founder, Jesus Christ. So it's a mysterious thing, but the evidence...
Well, there were slaves in the Old Testament and in the New Testament.
Sure.
Jesus refers to those slaves. And slavery at that point in time was totally different than the idea that we think of as slavery during the medieval times or during in the early colonial America, because the slaves were given a lot of responsibility. They controlled a lot of their master's business dealings, and so it was a totally different concept in the Bible than what was practiced thereafter.
It's possible. I don't think people wanted to have their children taken away and sold, but I think you can, that's really not something that I would contest. I'm sure that there was quite a bit of distinctions between slavery over the era. But getting back to your question about the fictional nature of Jesus, I mean, it just goes to understanding that the stories of Jesus, all of the so-called historical events, can be shown to have actually been developed from another story, from other
books.
Okay,
you mentioned this before. You said in Genesis 45 that the Joseph story and the fact that that he got sold into slavery into Egypt, that he went down into Egypt and he eventually wound up in jail. But as I mentioned, that whole area was well traveled. I mean, the people who lived in tents, the Bedouins at that period of time, constantly traveled those routes from Jerusalem, from Palestine down into Egypt, because that was the trade routes. And
sure.
So for somebody to go to Egypt is not an anomaly. I mean, that was the obvious place to go.
I would never claim such a thing. The genre in front of us, which incidentally is completely accepted by scholars who study the Gospels.
Which scholars are those?
Pardon?
Which scholars are those?
The book I would refer to would be by Goulder, Type and History in Acts, I think would be probably the place if anyone's interested in kind of going through modern New Testament scholarship in terms of the kind of understanding of this genre, but it's also found in the Old Testament. And just getting back to my point, you can't take the story of Joseph going to Egypt and try to analyze it in isolation, because certainly it isn't a vivid enough parallel to be without any contestation by itself. It's the overall pattern and sequence that you have to analyze it in. In other words, when I said, you know, in Matthew, you have the story of Joseph going to Egypt, Herod massacring the boys, they are dead, which sought the young child's life. In the Old Testament, you start out with Joseph going to Egypt, and he's a dreamer of dreams, which is also characterized about the character Joseph in the New Testament. Then you have the massacre of the boys, which is a far more unusual event than just traveling from Judea to Egypt. And then in Exodus 4, you have the statement, all the men are dead which sought thy life, which is mirrored by the statement in Matthew at 2:20, I believe, that they are dead which sought the young child's life. And in both cases, you have this divine character making the statement. What you have is what's called typology. Now, typology is not verbatimism. It doesn't, obviously it has differences, but there is enough parallelism that when you look at the overall pattern, what you see is that the pre-ministry of Jesus was developed as a collection of concepts.
But couldn't you say that that is a type and a shadow? Because the things in the Old Testament foreshadow the things that occurred in the New Testament, so that
right.
you
now,
do
so,
have
exactly right. That would be the way you could explain it. You could say, well, it's divine. It's literally this divine pattern, and that would have been continuing the kind of divine typology that occurs in the Old Testament. The literature that the authors developed are linking the prophets. And so the author of Matthew, he is linking back to the Old Testament.
How could he have done that? Because you have to recognize that what they had to refer back to. I mean, if you're talking a period of years, the Genesis was like 4,000 BC, and now you're going ahead 4,000 years, and then you're saying, well, this guy looked at the example that an earlier writer produced, when they really didn't have all that much access, unless you're talking about the papyrus scrolls or something like that.
No, I
but you're making that's an assumption.
No, I mean, I have to say that you're incorrect. The authors of the Gospels did have access to the Jewish scriptures, the Old Testament, the Torah, the Pentateuch. They actually had this. In fact, the Roman historian Josephus specifically states that following the war, the Romans took the Jewish scripture back to the imperial palace and locked it up where only they could have access to it. And that's in the histories, the wars of the Jews. So the authors of the Gospel certainly had access to the Old Testament or the Hebrew Bible. And so when they went to develop their character, they were able to simply use these stories but for a very specific thing. Now remember that the character Jesus Christ is bringing a new covenant. What's called the New Testament is actually the words meaning covenant. The new covenant between Jesus and God, which is replacing the old covenant, which was between essentially from God given to Moses. Now, this is why the author of Matthew uses all of these stories and essentially...
That's kind of an assumption. You're saying that is why, as if you have some sort of direct knowledge that is why.
Sure, and it comes from the fact that he's developing a new covenant. The character of Jesus is to bring a new covenant. And so the story that we have that he uses is the story of the old covenant, you see? In other words, he's showing that the pattern which God established to bring about the old covenant is repeating itself with his character, Jesus Christ. And this, of course, is why Jesus becomes a human Passover lamb. The Last Supper includes, very specific symbolism indicating that the character of Jesus is to be regarded as a human Passover lamb.
Oh, okay, Joe, I'm sorry, we do have to take our top of the hour break. We will be back at 6 minutes after the hour.